How can a microchip manufacturer keep track of 250 million control points at once?
How can technology behind animated movies help enterprises reimagine their future?
Built for Change listeners know those answers and more. I'm Elise Hu.
And I'm Josh Klein. We're the hosts of Built for Change, a podcast from Accenture.
We talk to leaders of the world's biggest companies to hear how they've reinvented their business to create industry-shifting impact.
And how you can, too.
New episodes are coming soon, so check out Built for Change wherever you get your podcasts.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, in 2008, the Republican candidate for president campaigned on a plan to fight global warming. How, in just 9 years, the GOP has gone from combating climate change to arguing it doesn't exist. And the cities and states who say the U.S. will still meet its Paris commitment, with or without Washington. It's Tuesday, June 6th. Coral Davenport, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Great to be with you as always, Michael.
So take us back to 2008. How were Republicans talking and thinking about climate change back then?
What was remarkable in 2008 is that the Republican candidate for the presidency, the GOP nominee John McCain, was running on the strength of his climate change credentials.
John McCain stood up to the president and sounded the alarm on global warming 5 years ago.
He ran ads touting his own record of pushing climate change legislation in the Senate. And in fact, it was very strong.
Reform, prosperity, peace. John McCain.
Senator McCain had teamed with then-Senator Joe Lieberman on a major climate change bill in the Senate. And around that time, we also saw several other Republican leaders stepping forward and kind of embracing climate change in a way that a lot of people don't remember. Newt Gingrich and Nancy Pelosi.
We don't always see eye to eye, do we, Newt?
No.
Did an ad together urging Congress.
But we do agree. Our country must take action to address climate change.
We need cleaner forms of energy, and we need them fast.
If enough of us demand action from our leaders, we can spark the innovation we need.
So what changed within the Republican Party, and why did it change?
So Obama gets elected. You know, he thought climate change was an issue that he would be able to have bipartisan success with in Congress, in part because the approach to tackling climate change that he wanted to take had been basically invented and embraced by Republican economists and by his own Republican opponent in 2008, John McCain, the idea of cap and trade, which is placing a cap or limit on the pollution and creating a market where businesses can buy and sell permits to pollute, sort of a market solution. So President Obama saw this as something that could get Republican buy-in, could get conservative buy-in, and he went ahead and brought this to Congress. In 2009, a cap-and-trade bill did pass the House, so there was a sense this was going to be a possibility for a bipartisan victory. And then a couple of things started to happen. A big one that really sort of changed the story was the 2010 Supreme Court decision, known as the Citizens United decision.
Back now with news of a big change in American politics, one you will almost certainly see on your TV. The U.S. Supreme Court today overturned laws on the books for nearly a century and ruled that corporations can spend freely now on political campaigns.
And one of the groups and companies that really stepped in a big way on that were the Koch brothers, Charles and David Koch, who run Koch Industries, which is sort of a large conglomerate organization that does a lot of oil refining, consumes a lot of fossil fuels. They're on the record questioning the science of climate change.
I don't think science is settled. I mean, how could it be? The people who are project or who have these models, okay, if we do this, that, the other, it could be increased by 1.5 degrees to 4.5 or 6. The ocean could rise 20 feet or 2 feet. I mean, so it is not settled. Matter of fact, science is never settled.
The sort of forum where this played out was in Republican primary races. And Americans for Prosperity and other groups that were funded by the Koch brothers or by Koch Industries would essentially go to these members of Congress and make it clear.
There's a lot of talk about changing the Earth's temperature and a new tax called cap and trade.
If you're in a Republican primary and you are talking about climate change, talking about cap and trade, supporting any of these issues, we are going to pour all our resources into making sure that you don't get elected.
America can't afford the cap and trade tax. Tell your senator to vote no.
And one example of this was Congressman Fred Upton.
And I'm one that does believe that the planet is warming and we need to take steps to reduce it. I think that we can. We can do it with greater efficiencies.
Congressman Upton is a House member from Michigan. He's been in office for many years. And for years, he had a reputation as a moderate who reached across the aisle. And he sat on the powerful House Energy and Commerce Committee, which is the committee that writes energy and climate change laws. And he had been someone who, on his website, talked about climate change as a real problem. Mm-hmm. It was something that he talked about in his district. And Congressman Upton was also in line to become the next chairman of the House Energy Committee. So he was someone who would be very powerful in influencing the course of what would happen with climate change legislation. He got a lot of messaging directly from Americans for Prosperity and from this growing Koch-funded Tea Party wing that this will not fly. And we will, you know, put up someone else in your primaries, and we will make sure that you do not get this position.
That sounds like a threat to basically take him out of office.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what happened to Congressman Upton? Did he win that reelection?
Mm-hmm. He won the reelection, and he won the chairmanship of the House Energy Committee. And in order to win this powerful position in the House, Congressman Upton essentially had to denounce or walk back most of the views and positions that he held.
Is carbon a problem or isn't it? And if it is, if you're going to kill the EPA regulation, what's your solution?
We want to do this in a reasonable way. Before the end of the next decade, our country is going to need 30 to 40% more electricity than we use today. So we need an all of the above strategy. We need clean coal. We need natural gas. We need nuclear, something that's not happened. And we need a whole host of things.
Do we need to regulate carbon?
I don't think that we have to regulate carbon to the degree where you have a carbon tax or you have a cap and trade system. And the House spoke pretty loudly. You know, you take that same cap and trade bill that passed the House last year. Today it would lose by 50 votes and it could never come up in the Senate. This regulation process is not the way to proceed.
He wiped out all mention of climate change from his website.
Just deleted it.
Deleted it. It had been there before. It wasn't there anymore.
So, Carl, what exactly is the political calculation for a Republican seeking office in this period?
If you want the support, if you want the active, aggressive support of this unlimited resource of Koch brothers money or Americans for Prosperity money, you pretty much come out and say you oppose cap and trade, oppose climate change policy. And strongest of all, say human caused climate change isn't real. The politics of this, which just 2 years before had been totally bipartisan, had all of a sudden become completely polarized. And climate change suddenly became this political litmus test.
So what ends up happening to the cap and trade bill?
It's easy to count to 60. I knew it. I could do it by the time I was in eighth grade. My point is this. We know where we are.
Harry Reid, who was the Senate Democratic leader at the time, said he couldn't even get enough support to bring the bill to the floor.
We know that we don't have the votes.
The bill just fell apart.
Let's talk for a minute about President Obama, the man who beat Senator John McCain back in 2008. How does his administration's approach to climate change in this period fit into the shifting Republican politics that you're describing?
One of the things that the President Obama did was he sat down with his advisors. They had several conversations where they said, all right, we understand that most of our legislative proposals that we bring to Congress will not get through. Mm-hmm. What can we do without Congress? And as it happened, climate change was one of the issues that they could take on without Congress. There was enough authority in existing laws, specifically the Clean Air Act of 1970, to put forth regulations on carbon dioxide, planet warming emissions without going to Congress.
If Congress won't act soon to protect future generations, I will. I will direct my cabinet to come up with executive actions we can take now and in the future to reduce pollution, prepare our communities for the consequences of climate change, and speed the transition to more sustainable sources of energy.
The delivery of that message just played right into sort of the political moment of the time, which was already, you know, Republicans in Congress broadly were painting Obama and viewed Obama very much as abusing his authority. So it became just far more politically explosive than it ever had been.
So then we get to the 2016 presidential campaign, which is 8 full years after John McCain ran those ads saying that climate change was a problem, and he gave those speeches saying something had to be done about it. How do the Republican candidates in last year's race talk about climate change?
So at that point, the issue of climate change had become deeply politicized. At the same time, the science at that point was so strong, specifically, and this is really interesting, in the state of Florida. That's an area where there's been so much scientific research and so much has been published showing really strongly and clearly that increased flooding in Miami Beach, for example, is directly attributable to sea level rise due to melting glaciers. And so you had candidates like Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush, both from Florida, of course, taking the position of,
I don't agree with the notion that some are putting out there, including scientists, that somehow there are actions we can take today that would actually have an impact on what's happening in our climate.
I don't think the science is clear of what percentage is man-made and what percentage is natural. I just don't. It's convoluted.
We heard a lot of the more establishment candidates trying to tap dance around the issue a little bit. And then, of course, there was Donald Trump.
So Obama's talking about all of this with the global warming and that. A lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean, it's a money-making industry, okay? It's a hoax. A lot of it.
Did not feel any need to tiptoe around the science and called it a hoax.
Therefore, in order to fulfill my solemn duty to protect America and its citizens, the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
Coral, when the president does something like pulling the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement, as he did last week, does that pretty much mean that the United States as a whole just isn't taking climate change seriously anymore for the term of that administration?
It certainly means the federal government is not. Absolutely. That said, there are some states that are taking very aggressive action, and the biggest one of those is California, which is actually large enough to have some impact on its own. It's the 6th largest economy. And California already has—
In the world.
In the world.
Wow.
It's the 6th largest economy in the world. And California already has a cap-and-trade program in place. California's Governor Jerry Brown is an aggressive environmentalist, and he wants to send a message to the rest of the world that if the federal government won't act, then some of the largest states will. And he wants to kind of be a climate diplomat on the world stage and push for international action from Sacramento.
Coral, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Always enjoy it. Thanks a lot.
Hi, Governor. Sorry, can you hear me?
I hear you, but I don't think you hear me.
I hear you, but it's a little bit faint.
Is it still faint?
Now it sounds better.
How about right now?
Yes, it's better. Governor, thank you. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. Where are we actually reaching you?
In Nanjing, Jiangsu, China.
The day after the president withdrew the U.S. from the Paris Climate Accord, Jerry Brown flew to China for an already scheduled meeting on climate change.
I'm here in China, a meeting with the top leadership of this country, and we're going to do everything we can to keep the climate from changing too radically.
So in the absence of White House support for this climate agreement, there are people out there who view California, given its size and its influence and your role as an advocate on this issue, they basically view California as the de facto negotiator of climate change for the U.S. Is that a role that you see for California?
Well, I don't know what your term de facto negotiator means. I think that has a nice ring to it. but I would rather look to the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And the facts are that California last year created 24% of the American wealth, even though we're only 12% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So we're an engine of prosperity and economic advancement. At the same time, we have the most aggressive environmental rules and the most far-reaching greenhouse gas regulations. So we are a living refutation of President Trump's Rose Garden speech, whereby we are reducing greenhouse gases. We already have 28% of our electricity mm-hmm. from renewable sources. And when I say renewable, I mean principally solar and wind, not even counting hydroelectric or nuclear. So we're on the move, and that's, I think, the mark of America to the world.
Can a state like yours or any state effectively deal with the issue of climate change without the federal government? Is that possible?
Well, let me unpack your question. Can we do something about climate change? Yes. Can we do what is needed? No. The federal government is needed. We will have to reverse the current misguided policies in Washington. But have no doubt, California and New York, Massachusetts, Washington, Oregon, we will have an impact. But the impact will be also to include changing the policy of the United States government.
Well, Governor, thank you for your time. Safe travels, and we'll talk soon.
All right, good.
Thank you, Governor.
Thanks.
Bye. In the days since the Trump administration pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord, Jerry Brown and other governors, joined by dozens of mayors, have said that their cities and states will still work to meet the United States commitments set by President Obama to reduce emissions 26% by 2025. But California is responsible for just 6% of U.S. carbon emissions. Even if three of the largest states involved, California, New York, and Washington, were all able to cut their emissions by half, the U.S. could not meet that commitment. We'll be right back.
I'm Shane Goldmacher. I'm a national political correspondent for The New York Times, covering the 2024 election. I have off and on for years covered the role of money in politics, and that means sifting through tens of thousands of line items in campaign reports, looking at who's getting paid, how much they're getting paid, who's donating to these campaigns, who's reserved the most ads on Google, who's this billionaire changing the shape of the race with a single check. Look, the campaign spin, the strategists tell you one thing, the numbers don't really lie, and those numbers help us ask the right questions. That's what's so special about the New York Times. We get to tap the collective knowledge and wisdom of my colleagues who have expertise in every nook and cranny of this country and this campaign trail to tell you the full story of what's happening in these critical moments in the last few weeks of the election. If this kind of coverage is important to you, you can support it by subscribing to the New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today. The London police have identified two of the three men who carried out this weekend's deadly terror attack, 30-year-old Rashid Redwan and 27-year-old Karam Shahzad Bhatt. Both men live just miles from the scene of the attack, and one of them had been under investigation by the British security services. Bhatt, a 27-year-old British citizen born in Pakistan, was known to be an extremist and was featured last year in a Channel 4 documentary called The Jihadis Next Door.
Just tell me the Qibla, please. Come on. Somebody tell me the Qibla.
The group display the black flag of Islam.
a symbol associated with Islamic armies for the past 1,200 years.
In one scene, he and several other men stand in a line inside London's Regent's Park as a man kneels in front of them and unfurls an Islamic State flag. And the Justice Department has charged a government contractor, a 25-year-old woman, with espionage for allegedly sending a classified report about Russian interference in the 2016 election to the media. It's the first criminal leak case under President Trump, who has called for a crackdown on leaks, which he says are undermining his administration. The charges were announced Monday night, an hour after the online news outlet, The Intercept, published a classified report describing cyber attacks by Russia's military intelligence aimed at the U.S. voting system just days before last year's election. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.